how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now or go online to kboo.fm/give.
Coming this Friday during KBOO Spring Membership Drive, it's News and Public Affairs Day. From 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.,
KBOO will be highlighting the voices of our news and public affairs volunteers. This spring's News and Public Affairs Day will be featuring programs that take a critical look at data mining
and the non-great side of social media and how our lives are increasingly affected by the internet.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday, April 12th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And it is 5 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and we have KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the local Rohingya Muslim community in Oregon is organizing special events through May.
Activists are moving against proposed oil drilling on Mount St. Helens.
And if you're going to visit Israel's occupied West Bank, you can now stay at one of around 200 Airbnb listings.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. If you have a seismically active volcano near your city, do you want to irritate it by drilling holes in it? Last December, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management ruled that Ascot Resources Limited's proposal to do exploratory drilling ahead of mining on Mount St. Helens would present no significant environmental impact, and the Forest Service agreed. The Cascade Forest Conservancy disagrees and filed a lawsuit late last week challenging the BLM and U.S. Forest Service's permit approvals. The company proposes drilling up to 63 exploration holes to look for copper, silver, gold, and molybdenum on a mining claim about 12 miles northeast of the mountain.
The Oregon Senate today smacked down a plan to limit the state's supply of legal recreational cannabis. Supporters argued the marijuana supply management plan was intended to address a rampant oversupply of cannabis that has caused prices to drop. It would have allowed the state to limit the number of marijuana production licenses it issues based on supply and demand for the product. Democratic Senator Michael Dembro from Portland said oversupply has left the state with enough marijuana to last nearly 7 years. He said managing the amount of marijuana produced could prevent the product from slipping into the black market. Senate Minority Leader Herman Bertschinger said the state should instead let the free market dictate prices. He argued the plan amounted to, quote, socialism and was, quote, a stab at capitalism in pure form.
The Oregon Senate just passed a bill to join the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. It's a campaign to reform the Electoral College. States joining the compact pledge to apply their electoral vote to whichever candidate received the most votes nationally, while more than a dozen states and the District of Columbia have already entered the compact. Members will not shift their vote until their combined electoral votes equal 270, enough to decide a presidential election. Oregon joining would make it 196. Only 5 times has the winner of the popular vote not been elected president, including George Bush in 2000 and Donald Trump in 2016.
A Republican state senator from Klamath Falls, who opposed the interstate voting compact, yesterday argued the historic designation of enslaved people as 3/5 of a person was not racist. Senator Denise Linthicum of Klamath Falls was criticized by two black lawmakers for arguing that the intent of the 3/5 compromise, which classified an enslaved person as 3/5 of a person in the U.S. Constitution, was a way to prevent slave states from gaining too much power in Congress. Historians traditionally characterize the 3/5 clause as the way that slave states maximize their political power in Congress, rather than minimizing their power. The Associated Press reports that Linthicum now says conversations with Senator Lou Frederick of Portland and Senator James Manning of Eugene, quote, helped him see the racist legacy that the Three-Fifths Compromise left behind. But he still maintains that it doesn't negate the intent of the move was to strip power from slave states.
The Washington County Sheriff has announced they are pulling out of a mutual aid pact with the Portland Police. KBOO reporter Yasmin Kobanoglu has more on the story.
Washington County Sheriff Pat Garrett has ordered his deputies not to take any enforcement action in Portland unless there is a direct tie to their casework. Now, other neighboring police agencies are also reconsidering helping the Portland police, except in cases of major emergencies. The order comes in the wake of a $1 million judgment against Washington County and Hillsborough after their officers wounded a man while assisting the Portland police to carry out a search warrant. Washington County and Portland have had a mutual aid agreement for the past 23 years. However, under the pact, each city or county agrees to be responsible for the acts of its employees when they are assisting another agency. Members of a Washington County tactical negotiations team wounded a Portland man, Adalberto Flores Haro, in 2012 while helping Portland police serve a search warrant at a nearby home. A federal jury then ruled against the Washington County officers, awarding Flores Haro a $7 million settlement. Earlier this year, a judge reduced the award to $1 million, and the amount is now under appeal. Although state law says the city requesting help should represent and defend an employee who responds from an outside agency, the mutual aid agreement can shift that representation to the city or county of the responding officer. According to the Portland City Attorney's Office, the city requested this provision in the agreement because they do not have control over how officers from an outside agency are trained or hired. Washington County's announcement comes at the recommendation of its senior assistant counsel, Elmer M. Dickens, who is also the attorney for the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Dickens made the recommendation to avoid potential risks from costly judgments in civil lawsuits over use of force, findings by Multnomah County grand juries reviewing police shootings, or scrutiny by Portland-hired consultants who also review officer-involved shootings in the city. Clackamas County is also considering halting their cooperation, while the Vancouver police plan to review the department's mutual aid agreements later this year. The president of the Portland Police Association, Officer Daryl Turner, said the city's elected officials need to figure out how to correct this issue because the loss of help from Washington County and others will have significant repercussions. He specifically pointed to the shooting at Clackamas Town Center in 2012 and the Reynolds High School shooting in Troutdale in 2014, when multiple different law enforcement agencies raced to the scene. Washington County made it clear that they would still send help to Portland in cases of extreme emergencies.
This is KBOO reporter Yasmin Kobanoglu.
Women First Transition and Referral Center is a nonprofit organization that supports Oregon women re-entering our local communities from incarceration. They are in the midst of a big campaign to strengthen their program and provide housing for their clients. Here to talk about it is founder Shannon Olive. Thanks so much for coming in, Shannon.
Thank you.
Could you talk about Women First? What does your organization do?
So thank you for allowing us to come in today. My name is Shannon Olive, and I am, again, the founder of Women's First. And what we do, so Women's First, we are a organization, and we work to serve women, to helping them to rebuild their lives, to become successful. We help them to overcome their obstacles through peer mentorship, life skills training, women empowerment groups, and helping them to reach. We work with different organizations and agencies to help them to provide support that leads to different referrals to help them to become productive and successful women of our community.
So Shannon, why did you start this organization?
So I started this organization because God, I am a Christian, and God gave me the vision back in 2007. It took 10 years for him to give me the confirmation, go forth to do his assignment that he has given me to do. But because of the fact that I have my own lived experience, I've been through the struggle. I've been in jail. I've been on drugs before. I've been in the life that what the women population that we're serving, I've been through what they've been through. So it's not just because I have an associate's degree and my major is criminal justice. I actually can relate to the women in which we are serving in our organization.
So this is a cause pretty close to your heart.
It is. I'm a very passionate person. I take the work that I do serious, and I'm a very privileged person because I feel that God has given me the opportunity to do what I am doing to give back to my community and help those that are in need.
And is there anyone else who participates with you at the center?
Yes, actually my mother. She is someone that has been in the struggle. When I was 7 years old, my father passed away. He was the first man in Oregon who donated his heart. The man that he donated his heart to, he lived on his heart for 5 years. My mother, after my father passed away, our family went to the left. My mom was on drugs for 28 years. In 2008, of September the 2nd of 2008, she got her life together, and she's actually been clean for 10 years. And when God gave me the confirmation to go forth to get the organization started, she said, "Shannon, I want to be here with you to help you so that I can be a part of giving back to my community."
So we'd like to hear a bit about the specific issues these women are facing. And I'm also curious, kind of just, you're talking about your own family. Curious if you could talk a little bit about the women's unique situations, but also how incarceration affects the whole family unit.
So some of the issues that women are currently facing is we have women that are facing domestic violence, addiction, involvement with DHS, discovering who they are, because of the fact that we have women that's been in prison, women that's been homeless, women that's been on drugs, women that's been through trauma. It's hard for them to come out of that situation and know who they are. So that's one of our main goals, is to help women to discover who they are and define who they are before they can actually get back on that successful path and become productive citizens of our community. Because of what they've dealt with in their past, it's important to know who you are in order for you to be able to come successful and productive. The overall, what was the question? What are the overall?
Well, just that you spoke to the issues the women are facing, and then I was curious, sort of as a follow-up, just kind of how that all that ripples out toward the family system. And, you know, I'd imagine when you're helping the women, you know, you're probably pulling in the other family members as well a bit.
Yeah, so we have 33% of our women that we serve have children. And so when you think about the kids, the children that they're facing, children that they're reuniting with, a lot of the kids have been traumatized, have been affected by, you know, their parents being in prison or their parents being on drugs. So we, at the same time, it's one of the things that we talk about, taking one day at a time. A lot of the women that we spoke to, they share with us, you know, it's hard coming out of prison and having, you know, to reunite with their children. It's learning how to be a parent again, learning how to take those basic steps again, or what do I do to even re-interact with my children? Or even when you talk about getting under the same roof with my children and having those parenting skills. And so what we, as an organization, what we're wanting to do is we're looking to have a, we went to and took a training with Resolution Northwest, and we took a training called School of Forgiveness. Because some of the women that we shared with is that they want to be able to reunite with their families and to be able to take that step of forgiving, coming together to be able to heal, coming together to be able to bridge that gap, to be able to just say, "Hey, I did it, but I'm ready to just come back together." Because a lot of the times, family is all we have today. And we might have burned bridges with our families, but we want to be able to reunite and build that gap, bridge that gap to be able to reconsolidate with our family and our children. So our organization is working together to figure out what we can do to provide activities, come together with each quarter to bring families together to have activities, hangout days, and work with other agencies, because we're not here to reinvent the wheel, but to be able to work with other agencies that has those resources to bring the families back together again.
And what other agencies are you looking to work with?
So far we are working with SEI, Urban League, because they have a lot of those type of resources available. We already are working with Bridges to Change. We've been working with Bridges to Change since September of 2017. And Central City Concern is another organization. We have a list of other places that we're looking to connect with, but those are our connections that we've already made so far.
So one of the things we saw on your social media site was Women First at Coffee Creek, meeting women who are being released and bringing them back home. So could you talk about kind of how that initial contact and connection works with the women who are being released?
So what that contact looks like is what we do is we launched the program, Peer Mentorship Program, in April of last year. And we was able to make that connection with the African American program, which is through the county. And they already have a program set up in Coffee Creek. And what we do is we serve women 6 months prior to their release. And we go into the prison twice a month on the second and fourth Mondays of each month from 1 to 3. And we are working with the chaplain that's out in the prison. And what we do is basically we go down there. It's an opportunity for us to build a relationship with the women, make connections, develop trust. Because when you go in and you talk to someone, it takes a while to develop a trust with somebody. You can't just go in and think, oh, we're here to help. And they just get on board right then and there. It doesn't work like that. You come in and we talk to them. We have a mentor request form. In order for you to get on board with our program, you have to have 6 months prior to your release. We've actually, our first group of women, they were like 30 to 45 days out. We made an exception to meet with them because they didn't have no one to work with. So we made that exception. There kind of was like our pilot program just to kind of see how things worked out. But we make that connection with them. And one thing that's unique about our program is because we help them to create an action plan. And that action plan is geared towards those action items around employment, education, housing, legal. It focuses on family, individual counseling, spirituality, and their goals that they would like to see for themselves. And it helps them to take ownership of meeting those goals, but then it also puts accountability on them to make sure that they're taking the necessary steps that they need to take in order to meet those goals. But the last thing that I want to say, each woman that comes out of prison, majority of them have to be assigned to a parole or probation officer. So they can also go in and show the action plan to their probation officer and say, hey, I have an action plan that I've created prior to me being released, and I would like to share it with you. Is there a way that we can work together to you help and support me to reach the goal that I have created for myself?
It sounds like you have a really holistic approach to reentry. The women who don't have your help, what usually happens to them in our state upon reentry?
So what I do know is that it could be devastating. One of the things that's most important, if you don't have someone that's there, it's a possibility that you can go back. You know, having advocacy, having support, having a fresh start, it's hard to come back out of prison and having to do it all by yourself, especially if you've been there for 4 years, 7 years, 8 years, a year. One of the things that we always talk about is things change. Every day something is changing in the world. Technology change, people change, the world change. I mean, things change every day. When you went in, there's that it's not going to be the same way when you come back out. So for you have to come back and have to navigate back into society by yourself, alone. Some people don't even have family when they come back out here. So having to navigate back out into society, it's hard. And without having a support system, it's really hard. And it, the statistic says that in 3 years, offenders reoffend and are back in prison. And what we want to ensure within our organization is that that does not happen.
We have a few minutes left, but I want to make sure we get a chance to talk about your housing fundraiser mm-hmm. that's going on. So what would you like people to know about that?
So I would like for people to know that we as an organization, we are raising funds to provide women long-term continuum care. We found out that a lot of organization has transitional housing. Women that are coming out of treatment have... You know, they get transitional housing, which is temporary, is 3 to 6 months. But what happens after that? A lot of these women have nowhere to go. Women have shared with us that, you know, some of them have burned bridges with families. And some women, some families are still subjected to gangs, street life, drugs. They don't want to go back there. Some of these women are reunited with their kids, their children, and they want to be able to go into their own safe place. So we as an organization are raising funds to get a house, a clean and sober, long-term continuum care, to be able to provide a space where they can resign until their names are pulled from the permanent house, Section 8 or HUD, or until they get into their own apartment. We are looking to reach our goal, $1,000. Allie King, thank you. We love you. She has reached out to her membership base, and they are matching us $2,500. So for all you viewers and listeners out there, we are asking for 100 people to donate $25 to our campaign by the end of this month, so that we can get $2,500 to match their members. You can go onto our website at www.rebuildwomenfirst.org and make a donation to help the women within our organization to reach our goal.
Thanks, Shannon. That was Shannon Olive of Women First Transition and Referral Center. Find them online at rebuildwomenfirst.org.
Thank you.
Yay. KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are two great KBOO community members to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Good evening, I'm Ruben Lawrence, and you are listening to KBOO, and it's our spring membership drive. KBOO is funded by our listeners, and we are asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member. As I said, I'm Ruben Lawrence, and I'm a volunteer here at KBOO, and I'm joined with...
Lisa Fay, host of Right to Survive Radio, which will be coming on at 6 p.m. tonight. We're so glad that you're joining us tonight, and we would love to hear from you. Any amount of donation always helps to keep this station on the radio, giving you news and facts and shows and entertainment that really hits home and is enjoyable. If you'd like to call in, the number is 877-500-5266.
And you can also donate online by going to kboo.fm. So you were just listening to our daily evening news broadcast, and with a great interview with Shannon Olive from the Women First Transition Referral Center. So this is the kind of local interviews and news that you will get when you listen to KBOO. We've been around for 50 years and hope to be around for 50 more years. So show us your support by calling us at 877-500-5266 or going to kboo.fm to become a sustaining member today.
You can continue your support for KBOO by increasing your yearly donation to $100. That would be $8 monthly, or $150 for $13 a month. We're online accepting donations at kboo.fm. And our toll-free number is 877-500-5266.
So, KBOO News, we produce our news independently, locally, and it's not something that you're really going to find common these days with the increased corporatization of media and the news in general. So, KBOO is one of the local institutions, Portland Institution, been around for 50 years, providing you with news every day, locally produced by our volunteers and KBOO team here. So help us with your support. Call us at 877-500-5266. You can also join us, donate online at kboo.fm.
There are popular shows on KBOO, 95.7 FM on your radio dial. It's quick and easy to donate to KBOO. Online, go to k-b-o-o.fm and call in on a toll-free. It's 877-500-5266. I know you're used to hearing these radio shows that you hear constantly. Come donate yearly, $5 monthly, or $60 yearly, or even $8 monthly and $100 yearly. That's the cost of one Starbucks coffee. So.
Yeah, I guess Starbucks coffee is $8 these days now. It's been going up over the years. So definitely, check out our website. You can go online, kboo.fm, or call us at 877-500-5266 to show your support for us today and our incredible programming, like our news programming. Now, I was just joined here by a fellow volunteer. I didn't actually get your name.
My name is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive on Right to Survive Radio, which will be coming up at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been at KBOO?
I've been in KBOO for approximately 10 years. Yeah, I think we may have the longest running house of the show in the country.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and see, this is exactly why KBOO is so important for Portland and beyond. We have I think we have support internationally as well, nationally and internationally. People love KBOO all over the place. So definitely check out our website. Go to kboo.fm to donate online, or you can call us at 877-500-5266.
And you hear the show. And you hear the shows that you normally don't hear on regular radio. So this is Democratic. You can look at Democracy Now, which come on. You can look at Right to Survive Radio, and you can watch, listen to other radio shows.
You can affect change in your community through the reporting you hear on the KBOO Evening News, and through you, we hold policymakers and officials accountable, and we often break stories that are of critical local importance. So pick up that phone, call 877-500-5266.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Right to Survive at 6. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather promises a stormy night with 100% chance of rain, wind gusts up to 20 miles per hour, and a low of 47. Tomorrow also offers a 100% chance of rain, wind cutting back to between 6 and 10 miles per hour, and a high of 56. Today in history, in 1947, Jackie Robinson took the field for the Brooklyn Dodgers, becoming the first African American to play Major League Baseball. The quote of the day is from star pitcher Satchel Paige. I never threw an illegal pitch. The trouble is, once in a while, I would toss one that ain't never been seen by this generation.
Pro-lifers in Texas are giving their support to a new bill that would criminalize all abortions in the state so that a woman getting that procedure could be convicted of homicide and face the death penalty. The legislation was proposed by Republican State Representative Tony Tinderholt, who was placed under state protection because of death threats he received when he first introduced the bill in 2017. Tinderholt, who has been married 5 times, said his intention is to guarantee, quote, equal protection for life inside and outside the womb, end quote. Republican Jeff Leach, chairman of the Texas House's Committee on Judiciary and Civil Jurisprudence, is reluctant to bring the bill to the full House. Even some anti-abortion groups, such as Texans for Life, oppose the law's severity.
A Texas gun company that destroyed more than 73,000 bump stocks when a federal ban on the rapid-fire tools took effect has sued the U.S. government, claiming millions of dollars in losses. RW Arms of Fort Worth on Monday announced the lawsuit and said the government took its property, quote, without just compensation. Bump stocks are used to modify semi-automatic or double-action firearms so that they fire bullets in rapid succession.